Welcome to the Pro Wrestling Outsiders Show, where we have one-sided conversations and unsolicited opinions. Here's your host, Kyle Joseph.
Welcome to the Pro Wrestling Outsider Show. It is the show with one-sided conversations, just me, and unsolicited opinions from me. Once again, this is Kyle here. I will be your host for the rest of the evening. Today's episode will feature Hell in a Cell 2021. Thoughts, opinions, likes, dislikes, we'll cover that all. As well, we will cover WWE as it pertains to this past Monday's Raw and the previous Friday pre-Hell in a Cell SmackDown. On top of that, we do have some NXT coverage that I'm still getting caught up on, but today's episode will cover TakeOver Stand and Deliver, as there is enough to fill that time. And as well, we do have AEW Dynamite from last Friday as well. So, please, stick around. Up next is Hell in a Cell Review. It is Hell in a Cell review time. Hell in a Cell 2021 has come and gone, and I'm not sure how to best describe how I feel about the show, but I will take a shot. Six matches, 2.5 hours long, no issues with the length of the show. Six matches is a little odd, especially with no tag team championship belt matches, no US, no Intercontinental. It was definitely a different lineup. To me, it did feel like this was something to bridge the gap into one of the bigger events, which is Money in the Bank. From what I was reading, they had done Hell in the Cell in order to kind of compete with AEW's Blood and Guts. But, I mean, that could just be coincidental. So, pre-show match, Natty versus Mandy, starting a bit of a storyline between the two tag teams. I can go along with it. They're both at this current moment actual tag teams where they support each other and they kind of have similar looks and similar, I don't know, personalities, backstories, whatever you want to call it. So I can get on board with this one. The match itself, though, I think some of it has left to be desired. I do find that when Natty's on, they're really great matches. But when Natty's off, or at least when things go off, it slides downhill pretty quickly. But, I mean, there's a couple of good moments. I always love the double bridge. They did it smoothly. It all obviously seemed to work together. And then they had the competing flip-ups just to kind of show that they were on the same level. But there was a lot of sloppiness, a lot of, I don't know if it's a lack of speed or whatever the case may be, but there definitely was some misses in that match. And I think when you're only looking at just the pre-show, and it's really the only match, it stands out a little more obviously because there isn't anything to compare it to. But I digress. Up first is the Bayley versus Bianca SmackDown Women's Championship in Hell in a Cell. I will tell you that I was thoroughly impressed with this match. Women being in the Hell in a Cell is still relatively new, and it has nothing to do with their women. It's just that they're learning the creativity as they go. And they're they're honing their craft, and they're really finding what works in those types of environments, and it's really starting to come along. And I thought this was a really good match. I do love that Bayley acknowledged that Michael Cole was talking. Now, whether how clear she could hear or not didn't really matter, but she was calling him out, which I thought was, you know, was really a great, great idea. It really shows that she is aware and she really doesn't appreciate things being said about her. As much as I'm never really a big fan of Bianca and the use of the hair, it's kind of this weird, like, foreign object, but not foreign object, and such. So, and think in other circumstances, Lex Luger's steel plate in his arm, things like that, where at some point in time it was going to become kind of an illegal. But I did like that they used the hair, especially to Bailey's advantage. I think it was creative. It offered a new way of looking at things, a new, what's the right word? Opportunity to really go further. Because obviously the hair for Bianca is, it's a big thing. It really makes her stand out. It's that sneaky weapon and all that such. So that's not going away. And being able to utilize it to her disadvantage just offers a bit of creativity. I was not surprised that Bianca won. It's just they're still riding her in that kind of going forward. But it actually, this match definitely surprised me. They had a lot of creativity. They really, put some good spots in there, really pushed it. So I can applaud that. Up next, we had Cesaro versus Rollins. First of all, I want to just state before that is that as much as I appreciate Pat McAfee and his kind of fan point of view, and I think he's obviously still trying to find his groove in where he sits. He's never going to be a Corey Graves where he's like essentially pure heel, but he does keep kind of flip-flopping back and forth, and that's fine. But I find sometimes he's just too intense. And it's not a Mauro Ranallo intense who's doing all of the play-by-play. This is just kind of commentary here and there. That just, I don't know. It can be too much and it gets a bit distracting. But I can't complain too much because I think, you know, given all that's going on, he's doing a good job with working with Michael Cole to really create that enthusiasm. Now back to Cesaro and Rollins. I thought this was going to be the man of the match of the night. It turned out not to be for me. I'll tell you at the end what my match of the night was, but for this one, it was still a very solid match. Nothing wrong there. It was really, you know, a no gimmick, real wrestling match. They had a little bit of work outside, nothing major. Yes, there was the swing, but it wasn't too over the top. I had to, you know, applaud that they do have really good chemistry in the ring together. The fact that Rollins won was a surprise to me. I figured Cesaro was going to win. Was it the ending I'd want? I don't know. I'm so on the fence with sneaky roll-ups and how effective they are, but they put on a good match, and they are very complimentary. So if that's the worst part of it, then it's not so bad. I do feel like Seth, though, needs to move on. I don't know, even the U.S. title, does he, something, other than just wearing the funky suits and just kind of doing this, not really fitting into place. He's not up in the main event yet. He's not really going for anything else. So I think there's opportunities here for him to kind of get back in that championship picture, even if it's for the U.S. title, a secondary title. Tag would be a bit, I think, of a stretch, unless, you know, had he the Buddy Murphy thing stuck around, then I think there is that opportunity that they could have gone down that road if you want to bring him into the tag. I definitely don't want to see him in a AJ Styles type situation where you kind of throw this tag team together with no real whatever and you rely on this big monster to win. So we'll see what that comes from that. Again, I hope that we'll see more of Seth in a championship light. But we have the Alexa Bliss versus Shayna Baszler match. I'm still unsure of what is going on with Alexa, where they're taking it. The stuff with Reginald and controlling him and controlling Nia is, again, it's, I don't know what's going to come of it. I'm not too sure what the feeling of it is. I'm still waiting for that Dark Princess from WrestleMania come in. I'm not sure yet, but I'm still not hooked in. I'm still waiting. I still want to see where this goes. I'm a big fan of Shayna Baszler. As I said on the pre-show, the fact that she's kind of getting back into the leather jacket, hair pulled back, kind of don't give a shit mentality is where I like to see Shayna. So I'm hoping that this will have a proper denouement so that we can really get a great match between the two of them. Alexa winning is obviously no surprise. I'm still not on board with the Twisted Bliss. I said before that she should get something like the Mandible Claw. I mean, she was thrown in the sleeper, which at least was different. But I can't believe a 105-pound woman doing a twist, McTwist, or whatever you want to call it, off the top rope and coming down on you is really going to put you out for good. So I will talk a little bit more in the next section about what's coming forth or what's happened with Alexa and Shayna, but this moment is just focusing on Hell in a Cell. Next match we had was the Sami KO match, which I knew was going to be a solid match, good match. They work so well together. They know each other so well that I don't know if I've ever seen a bad match with them, and this came to me as no surprise. Their storyline, while it's not the strongest, it still is relevant. It'll always be relevant until if at some point in time they connect again and then they be, you know, tag team, still relevant. They just have enough history that they're able to reference that it makes sense. I liked that they played up his throat, Kevin Owens' throat, and I liked that came as a point of issue for him, as it really hampered his ability to win. I appreciate that. I think that is really the sign of good storytelling, when you're really carrying through situations that are supposed to be bad or devastating, and then you kind of forget about it or act like it didn't happen later. But the referencing of the Nigerian Nail, well, I've said before, is a dumb name. That became too much. And I don't know if it's a question of the way that WWE is and having to kind of continuously repeating items just so that people who aren't big wrestling fans can keep tabs on things, but as they do it all the time, especially referencing WrestleMania Backlash or Hell in the Cell or whatever it is, but that was too much. But the match, like I said, was good. I do love Sammy's, I want to say it's a Tope Suicida, but I'm just making that up. It's the one that goes over the top with. I always find it's smooth, it lands well, it's just, you know, nice to watch. So I am always a fan if he has a chance to do that. And then obviously it was a no-brainer that Sami was going to win. And he won big. It helps move forward the story with Commander Aziz and Apollo. So I applaud that. The next one, which is the Flair versus Ripley match, for once in the past time, that I actually liked what Charlotte was saying in the ring. The taunts and the vocals that she was giving really carried through and kind of showed that, yes, Rhea's the champ, but she's not the champ. And Charlotte is still sitting on top of the throne, regardless if she has the belt or not. This is, you know, her division. It's her promotion. It's her universe. And really, Ripley's just playing in it. They had really great back and forth. Everything was smooth, and you really weren't sure which of these competitors was going to come out on top, because they are very similar in size, and well, not in style, but in that they don't go way over the top, or that they aren't, you know, massive technicians. So they do have similar styles. They just go about it different ways. Ripley hurting her knee and really carrying that through. I think, again, like Kevin Owens, it creates great storytelling. It allows any sort of incident that happens after that really, really work. So if she's unable to complete something because of her knee, then you believe it. If she's really hurting her knee and then she goes and she does some crazy thing where her knee is no longer an issue, well, then it's like, okay, well, that doesn't really make any sense. But that was good. I did not like the ending. The fact that Rhea just hit her with the cardboard, whatever you want to call it, plywood covering of the table, just, I don't know, didn't really seem to fit. And I felt like that match and that outcome would have been better suited before Hell in a Cell. And then you can get into a TLC match, a No Holds Barred, Extreme, even a Hell in a Cell if you wanted to, where it's like, hey, you keep hitting me with things that you shouldn't, and now I get to hit you back. I have said this time and time again, I am losing my fandom with Rhea. I just prefer her as the, not anti-hero, but the hero with an edge that she was in NXT. To me, it's a better spot, especially if you're going to put her up against Charlotte. Charlotte is an ultimate heel. Charlotte as a babyface just doesn't work. And when you put like a, you know, two heels together, one of them turns into a babyface even for that moment of time, and somehow Charlotte is that individual, and it just doesn't make any sense to me. We get to the final match. You know, it's the big one. We have obviously Drew and Bobby, Drew's last chance to win. It was okay. I wouldn't put these two in that kind of match. There was a couple of you know, really good spots. Drew getting hit the stairs, him being pins with the, pinning the, him with the kendo sticks. Kendo sticks, I apologize. Kendo sticks. You know, that worked out well. His back getting absolutely chewed up was something. That was definitely frightening. And obviously when he comes on Raw the next day, it looks terrible. But it gives you a bit of reality to it, that this isn't just sounds like it hurts or sounds like it's hitting. You can tell it's actually doing that. So I have to applaud that. But I don't know if these two have the chemistry that really worked well in this type of environment. I also don't know if Drew is the kind of person that really fits into this environment. I do like that MVP got in the cage. I like that he kind of offers that distraction. It's the right kind of manager role where he is getting involved without getting too much involved. Creates a distraction. Drew gets looking at him and got caught off guard. And it definitely helped the win. I did one thing I did find a little comical. I don't know if anybody else noticed it. But at one point in time, Bobby Lashley put Drew through a table. You know, it was pretty, obviously, every time somebody goes through a table, everyone loves it. But when they pan to Drew being on the ground, you just see this hand come out and like push bits of the table out from under the ring. I'm not sure what the purpose of that was, but I found a little kick that you just get this this tiny hand. So that kind of wraps up Hell in the Cell. It happened. I think this time around, and I don't know if it was just placement in the season, it just wasn't as big of a deal. And it puts me at a position where, as we go through the rest of the pay-per-views leading up to WrestleMania, which is, I know, way down the road, I'll forget about this one. This will not become, oh my God, I can remember this match in Hell in a Cell, or oh, this was incredible. Probably within two pay-per-views, it'll be a non-starter for me. Move on, life goes on. To me, man of the match of the night was actually Bianca and Bayley. I felt like they really told the story well. They had some creativity in what they were doing. They really seemed to get a flow together. And it is probably because I was more surprised at how well the match went that it kind of gives it a little boost. But when I look back at all the matches, that's the one that stands out the most. So for me, match of the night, Bianca versus Bayley. This story will continue, and we'll see. We'll see what happens. That is it for the Hell in a Cell review. After the break, we're going to break down all of the action from WWE pre-Hell in a Cell with the SmackDown, obviously post-Hell in a Cell with Raw. So please, don't go away. We'll be right back. Hey guys, it is time to go over some WWE, specifically SmackDown and Raw. So it's kind of a weird episode because we have SmackDown pre-Hell in a Cell, Raw post-Hell in a Cell. So some of the references will be update, but I still kind of want to get through them. There's not as much on the SmackDown side because I knew that Hell in a Cell was coming up, but I wanted to just make sure that I understood or carry through any storylines that were coming in. The Raw was obviously going to be a little bit more to it because we fleshed out from the pay-per-view. So initially some thoughts here. If I look at the Bianca thing, you know, Bianca Bailey. Bailey's a fantastic heel. It is very interesting when you look at it because she was the ultimate babyface in NXT. And even to some extent, obviously, to when she came out to the main roster, but never really clicked because she didn't have the same relationship with the fans that she did in NXT. So she was great. Everyone loved Bailey. And now she's turned and continued to turn even more and more heelish, if that's what you want to call it, and it still works. She gets annoying. She is, you know, dastardly, and it all works. And I applaud it, and I like that she's continuing to do it, and then they haven't turned her back. So obviously, having her with Bianca makes sense because apparently nobody hates Bianca. So having Bailey being able to push that forward, it makes sense. I'm just not a big fan of Bianca, and nothing to do with her personally. It's just not a character that I can get behind. It's not a character I enjoy watching. Yes, I understand the literal power that she possesses, and I understand the fresh face that can really move things, or rather gather people in. It's just, for me, it's just not a champion there. I feel like Bailey or Sasha, there's just some other women that, to me, is where I'd want to see as champion, but there could be worse, so I won't knock Bianca too much. Couple other just notes. Obviously, this Uso thing is still going to continue. We're still at some point in time going to get some sort of, update. Jay has been on for the last couple episodes. Jimmy coming out and congratulating Roman. It's still unsure of where it's going to go, but obviously, it's going to have to happen, that there's going to be something. One brother's going to turn on the other, or both brothers are turning on Roman. Whatever it may be, it's going to happen. It's just, I kind of like that it hasn't happened yet. It's kind of a little of an old school storyline where things would go on for months before you really get into the final stage. But again, like, you know, it's like some of the things going on, like I'm still engaged. I'm still interested in seeing what's going on. And that's the sign of a good story. The Apollo Crews Commander Aziz thing, as I said about the Nigerian Nail with Kevin Owens, I just don't like it. I don't like Commander Aziz. I don't like the character. I don't really feel like he brings enough to the table. He is very much like an Omos, where it's just, he's the big guy. And I think that there could have been better use of other people that could have formed, you know, his security. Whether you have two smaller guys, not smaller, but not, you know, 7 foot tall, that could have covered that same ground, but maybe a little more entertaining. There is enough guys, though, in that territory. You know, you're looking at Big E and Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. There's a good chunk of that, second tier, because that's what that belt is, wrestlers that you can kind of move around. And Apollo still being champion can work. He makes sense. He's still the bad guy. Everybody else is, whether it's, you know, Sammy, who's bad but not really bad, and then you have Kevin and Big E, who are obviously on the positive side. So there's enough conflict back and forth that it can all work. One of the other storylines that we had was the battle for the crown. You know, the final winner, Shinsuke Baron. I hope that this doesn't go away just because it's supposed to be the last match. The Boogie thing, or Boogs, whatever his name is, I can come and go with that one, but this is just, it's entertaining, and it makes me wonder, and I will tell you that Xavier Woods had mentioned on Twitter that he was hoping for a new King of the Ring, and I like the idea. I mean, I have to applaud King Corbin for carrying this as long as he has, and it hasn't been terrible, and it has not been a killer of careers, as some in the past. Wade Barrett winning the crown, they didn't really work with it properly. They could have, but it just didn't, and then he went into that Legion thing and out the window. So I have to applaud Baron Corbin still carrying it through, still making sense. Yes, it's modified. You know, now he's a rich boy, which is fine. It's like Cameron Grimes. It conveys the same energy, just in a new package. So, but I mean, I think there's an opportunity for another great King of the Ring. I think there's enough middle card guys that you could really do it, but then you have to do something with that crown. That crown has to say, hey, this guy's next in line for something. Not, hey, here's your crown, now go away. The other point I wanted to make was just, Paul Heyman is such the perfect manager. He, you know, reminds me so much of Bobby Heenan in that he doesn't take over. He doesn't become the main attraction, but he complements that individual so well in how they push whatever angle they're trying to push. He's very good with his words. He's very good with the emotion behind his words so that he can really sell the story, deliver the message in whatever way it needs to be so that you believe it. He's clever. He is imaginative. He is, even when he's not talking, the way he holds the belt, the way he whispers in the ear, and all those little touches that that I think he's a really, really, really good manager, very old school, and I would like to see more of that if we're going to have managers, is bring them back to the old school. That's their job, is to support the wrestler. MVP does a decent job, but at times I still feel like he is trying to steal the spotlight, whereas Paul just aims the spotlight where it needs to go. So that kind of a SmackDown, like I said, it was short because in terms of my thoughts, just because we were really leaning into Hell in a Cell. Next week, we'll kind of get back to normal, so I'm sure there'll be more to talk about. But now it's on to Raw. Another Hell in a Cell match, which was just I don't know. It seems to me that if you're going to have Hell in a Cell matches on SmackDown and Raw, you might as well have them on the pay-per-view. And it's not to say that this wasn't a bad match. It was enjoyable. I was surprised, but it was enjoyable. It does bring me back to one of my favorite Hell in a Cells in a long time, which was the Usos versus the New Day. That was a really, really great match. And so seeing Xavier Woods in there, again, really shows that he is somebody that can be there. He can put on a great show. He can put on a great match. He is not to be missed. And it's something to be said, like, he is extremely underrated. And I like that they called out that, yes, Kofi has won a championship. Yes, Big E has moved on to SmackDown to do his thing. But Xavier Woods is there all the time. He put on, he does the Coast to Coast, or whatever he calls it. You know, man, like, he can really go. And he's not a Marty Jannetty, as I feel like they're trying to convey, or some people think it sometimes, that he's not. He's not a Marty Jannetty. He is as much as ever. It's either other two, Kofi and Big E, as part of that success. He's not riding anybody's coattails. So what happens if Kofi slides down the singles route? I don't know what happens with Xavier. Do we maybe see him on the U.S. title run? I don't know if he is small enough for a 205 Live, kind of situation. I mean, I wouldn't want him to put on 205 Live, because I would hate to see him disappear. But maybe that's an option to try and just expand his reach or expand his view outside of the support guy that this current moment he's kind of playing. Eva Marie out again. Again, they still don't reference Piper. Everyone who watches NXT UK knows who Piper is. I like that she didn't carry through. I still don't understand why Eva Marie's back. She's putting up the same antics where she's not really a wrestler, so she's going to pretend to wrestle. I don't know. I'm disappointed that she is in the ring. I feel like if you had brought her in with a proper protege or a proper coming up star and she plays that Paul Heyman heel manager, I could then buy that. Or even if they had done some sort of like Tim Thatcher, whatever it is. But, you know, like that giving demonstrations, but obviously not in a wrestling capacity, but in a health, fitness, whatever you want to call it. The kind of stuff that she was conveying that she does in this, it just, I don't know. I've never been a fan of her. I felt bad when the NXT universe crucified her when she was doing matches with Bayley. But when I look at it, it's like, well, what have we missed? Nothing, other than the fact that she's not red anymore. She's got pink hair. Or purple, pinky purple. So I gotta hope that this is a one-off and we can just move on from her. Or she changes into a different role where she is not in the ring and not taking time away from other women's wrestlers that, yes, may not be at the top of the card, but you could still put them in these matches. They could still go against, you know, Naomi and Asuka. Well, I, again, am still going to be on the Asuka train. This is not a match she should have been in, considering it really was a showcase for Naomi, and it just, I don't understand. But when we look at tag matches, you know, I talked before about the pre-show match with Natty and Mandy. Again, I can appreciate that we're doing a story carrying through that belt. I'm not sure where it goes from there and I guess at this current moment, there's really the only two. If you're carrying through a story with Shayna and Nia elsewhere, there isn't really any other anymore because there's no Riot Squad. Naomi and Lana are done. So really, you're down to three. And at least you have something. This is something to go with. It doesn't take a lot of time. It still reminds people that this women's tag belt exists. And so I won't lose sleep over having to see it. We're starting into the Money in the Bank qualifying matches. I found it interesting, and I was wondering as I was watching things, and I look at who wins and who loses, and I'm wondering when you're planning a Money in the Bank ladder match, and it doesn't have to be necessarily Money in the Bank, but in enough people in a match, especially that involves high flying ladders, whatever you want to call it. What is more important? Is it bigger names to draw people in or to carry over specific stories because you want your big names going up against your big names, a la Drew McIntyre trying to insert himself again? Or are you picking people that will have a more entertaining match in that moment? Is it short term or long term? And the way I'm looking at who is involved in the Hell in a Cell, I kind of think the short term. You have Ricochet, you have Riddle, you know, you have Johnny Drip Drip. All three are very athletic. And so I got to think that's the role they're going down. Less Otis and really putting on, whether it's a show stealer or whatever, it doesn't matter. This is enjoyment. Let's do what we can. Speaking of Johnny Drip Drip, I don't know. So I haven't really seen John Morrison in the in WWE. I watched him in Tough Enough, and then I took a step back from wrestling and caught up with him while he was in Lucha Underground, and then kind of remembered him and moved him through, you know, AAA and then into Impact. And I don't know if it's the same character, but I do find that when he was Johnny Impact and he was the top of Impact Wrestling, when he was in Lucha Underground and he was one of the showstoppers, is this really the smarter move? Was this an opportunity to just come back and
do things with his friend The Miz, or was this a money thing, or is he at the point where he doesn't need to be the top of the top, but it's got to be different. It's hard to understand why you would go from the top of one promotion to a sidekick. So hopefully this, with Miz being out, he will be more prominent as a single competitor, as an actual single competitor, not just doing The Miz's work. Only time will tell. At this point in time, Johnny Drip Drip is just not for me. On the women's side, it's interesting that they're doing tag matches. This is how Naomi and Asuka got into the Money in the Bank. I don't know what the reasoning behind it is, if it's just there's not enough time, or they can't really figure out how to I don't know why they're doing it as tag matches in order to get in. It just seems quick, like rush job of like, hey, we need this filled out. Let's get to it. We got a new opening for Alexa. So clearly there's more to this, and I have to applaud that they've continued this. This is, generally speaking, not in WWE's realm, more of an NXT, but specifically WWE. So I got, you know, I'm interested. Again, I'm still hooked. I'm still wanting to know what's going to happen from this. Putting them against Nia and Shayna made sense. The creepy weirdness keeps going. And so because she has a new entrance, new music, they really are pushing forward with this, and I appreciate that. And I got to think it's fun for Alexa Bliss. It has to be. The effort you put in, either that or she is just a true professional, that no matter what she's given, she does it the way that Cody did with Stardust, where, yes, it wasn't the best thing for him, but he didn't stop it from putting in the effort to do it. So I still hope she's having fun. I appreciate what's being done, and I want this to not just fall off. Just keep going, push the envelope. Her tag partner, though, man, was this something. I thought it was a joke at first. I thought this was where Alexa Bliss was going to transform her back into Crazy Nikki. But nope, she rocked that superhero uniform for the entire match and beyond. God, I hope this doesn't stick. I want Crazy Nikki back. Crazy Nikki was fun. She was different. She fit really well with Sanity, and I think it's really unfortunate that didn't happen, or anyone it did. But this underdog fight for the little guy, I'm just not buying. The mask thing is ridiculous. The blue paint to go underneath the mask just looks odd. I hope it doesn't last. I hope that this is what Alexa Bliss comes and changes her into Crazy Nikki, and they can go from there. Wow. I mean, one of the highlights, though, I do have to say is the crossbody she put on all three, Shayna, Nia, and Reginald. Very, very good looking one, and I have to appreciate even those subtle, less dramatic moves when it gets done. It's really just, to me, is an appreciation for the art form that it is. And then one other thing from Raw I just happened to notice. Jimmy Smith, I mean, his commentating is good. He definitely is more comfortable. You can tell he's done more of the work. Could he carry a two-man booth? Probably. I do think that there is still too much talking from time to time between the three of them, but he's definitely not shying away. He's definitely holding his own. So there is good things to come, and hopefully this one sticks, because I do think we need some consistency in the voices of each show. So that breaks down all of WWE for me. Next, we'll come up with NXT TakeOver Stand and Deliver, so I'm not too far off now. So I'll kind of break down what I thought about that, and then we'll move on to AEW after that. So again, thank you very much for sticking around. I will be back very shortly.
NXT TakeOver Stand and Deliver. This is the two-night WrestleMania weekend event for NXT. I will start by saying, and I know I've mentioned this before, I'm okay with the two nights. I really am. I think there's opportunity here to not tire people out. Take a couple hours each night. People are up for it. They're energized. They're willing to go. And you can get more out of them if you give them a chance to rest up. So once again, I'm all for it. Break down some of the highlights that I thought. Don't want to necessarily go through each one because there is quite a few. First things first, classic match between Walter and Tommaso Ciampa. Friggin' slap happy match, just going back and forth. Those chops are so vicious. But what I did appreciate is at one point in time, Walter did injure his hand and they just kept going with it. And every time he had an opportunity to do something, he wasn't as effective. And Tommaso would utilize it to come back. And like I've said in other matches, I really like when people take the time to carry something through. An injury, an emotion, whatever it is, just carry it through the match. And it creates that consistency and that continuity that really just puts it over the top. I will say I didn't really necessarily like the ending. I thought that was just a bit of a weird kind of final slap ending. But, I mean, I'm not too sure the reasoning behind it. So, well, it exists. It's out there. Not that it necessarily ruins the match because it was a good classic match with no real gimmicks, no world, you know, outside interference, nothing like that. It was just a straightforward match. I do think it's where Tommaso is really surprising for me. I'm kind of used to this Blackheart bad guy, do what it takes to win, and to see him in a straightforward match with Walter, it was nice to see, and I was impressed with that he was able to keep up with Walter in this type of match. We have the Dunn and Kushida match, which I think is a real big sleeper. And I kind of thought it might have been just based on who was in the ring. The interesting thing is the kind of lead up to this was very quick. During the battle royal, whatever you want to call it, them getting caught up with each other instantly created this animosity, and you're able to just flip it over. And I think when you're coming up with two nights and 2+ hours each night, you need to have these kind of matches. And so you're now looking at just straight one-on-one, one guy versus another guy, one trying to win. No big giant story with it. It's just a solid quality wrestling match in and out. So I was thinking about this in that I like to see solid wrestling matches. Yes, I do enjoy stories. I do enjoy telling them, the arcs, the surprises and everything. But when it comes down to it, I still need solid wrestling matches. Otherwise, I might as well just watch TV. So that's what keeps me in line, gets me from story to story, is that I can sit there and just watch great performers go back and forth. Speaking of the Gauntlet match, again, I'm not a big fan of a lot of guys that were in it, so it's a little harder for me to enjoy. You know, only enjoying nearly two out of all the wrestlers, just kind of like, okay, let's get to it. I'm over it, and let's get move on. We had the triple threat tag team match between for the NXT, the vacant NXT title. Where you had Ilio Fantasmo's group. I honestly will never remember their name. And you had the Grizzly Young Vets, and then you had MSK. And MSK came out on top, which I gotta feel bad for the Grizzly Young Vets because they constantly are getting the short straw. One thing I always wondered, though, when you have a triple threat tag match, why don't you have one from each in the match? So take a regular triple threat match in which you would have three wrestlers and then just give them a tag. And so whoever's tagged in is the one that I can actually win. But why not? Like, it's always seemed weird to me when you have three different teams and only two people. And so anybody can tag anybody in and it gets a little chaotic. There was some really, really cool double moves with Wilder Mendoza, where they did the double coast to coast. And then they did the one diving through the ropes, one diving over the ropes. And I really thought that that was surprising to me. I didn't expect it from those guys because I haven't really been overly impressed or maybe not impressed is the right word. I haven't really cared or been attracted to what they were doing because really it's about the boss. So there was definitely some cool things in there. When we get into the women's match, you have, you know, Io Shirai versus Raquel Gonzalez, and as I've stated before, she is the new Diesel, and this is the Rocket. This is where they bring her in. She has just jumped to the front, and she's now the champ. Io Shirai did some weird, crazy jump off the skull. Did not look like it landed the way it was supposed to. Kind of gave me the cringe of the idea. Not necessarily that she got hurt, but the idea that she could have easily got hurt. So I'm not sure how many more of these types of jumps that she needs to do in order to just kind of convey that she is the genius of this guy. But hopefully with Raquel Gonzalez, we're going to get a lot to go with in terms of a good, solid run. Similar to what Io Shirai had, I think when we look at Raquel Gonzalez and she's supposed to be this you know, beast and powerhouse, that you can't have her lose quickly. It just doesn't make sense. It's very similar to, and we'll talk later about Karrion Kross. They have the same type of persona. This undefeatable behemoth. And so hopefully she gets a little while out of it. Plus the fact when you look at the rest of the women's roster, there's no one of her size now that Rhea's gone. So how do you work that out, that she still stays on top if she doesn't lose? I mean, if she loses. There was a stupid, useless stat, and I will carry this beyond wrestling to any sport, but wrestling does have its fair share of dumb stats. And Vic saying that she is the first person to have both the NXT women's title and the women's tag champ titles at the same time. Stupid stat, since she's only the first person to win it, because there's only been two, and neither Ember nor Shotzi will be in the contention for the women's title. So again, it's pretty self-explanatory. Well, I wasn't sure if Amy had run out of things to say. When we get into night two, we had the King of the Cruiserweights Championship ladder match. Versus Devlin versus Escobar. Escobar coming out on top. There was one spot that, actually it was near the end, that Devlin took onto the ladder. And my brain can't comprehend how these guys are not more serious, Andrew, when they take shots like that. I know that their ladders are not normal ladders, but they're still not soft, made of pillow ladders. So I really thought he was in serious trouble there. But, you know, I appreciate the two of them in their match. Ladder matches are always can go either way. Either they're utilizing the ladders too much and it becomes this like spot after spot after spot, and you can see them setting it all up, or they're used in the way that really conveys the story and kind of gives you a final ending to that match with however the ladders utilize. And this was the case here. We had the women's tag match. I mean, take it or leave it. It wasn't really anything that I could not remember, but remember. It's not memorable. It doesn't. You could have not had this match in the card, and it wouldn't have made a difference. But if we look at the way, Johnny Gargano is just so lucky that he gets to come up with these comic book based gear. He's kind of, well, he's the NXT version of New Day in terms of their gear is very pop culture. I mean, his Iron Man gear was sick. And I've seen it, you know, the Wolverine outfit was awesome. And I think he's done the Iron Man one before too, in a different way. But it's one of the things you look forward to with Johnny is what is he going to come out with? And it's neat because you don't see it. It's not like he does the Iron Man outfit and then he wears it for a bunch of weeks. it is this special opportunity or event or whatever you want to call it that says, hey, this is big because I have a new outfit. And ring gear is, I always find, polarizing for me. Because there's some people who have really, really cool ring gear, and then there's some that have really terrible ring gear. And then you have a bunch that are like in the middle, so you don't hate it, but you don't love it, but it doesn't carry you either way. Like, it doesn't enhance the story, but it doesn't distract from the story. So, but I do definitely enjoy Johnny's outfits. And hopefully he won't run out of pulp culture references as the years go on. So we looked at the two main events. Both matches, I would say, I was looking forward to. When you look at Finn Balor and Karrion Kross, they have obviously very different sizes. But I don't think their styles are necessarily that different, because even though Finn's smaller, he's not necessarily that much of a high flyer, with the exception, obviously, of his coup de grace. But other than that, he's not flipping around or jumping around, and so they're a little more gritty. It's unfortunate, though, that this was not done in front of a full audience, because I think this match specifically, you would really, really have felt it with the audience. The match I really enjoyed. It was good back and forth, and while Karrion Kross is this big beast, it showed the intelligence of Finn in understanding how to break him down. Doing the liver shots and then the arm work. Like, it was really methodical. And when you have, differences of a size, I like when they're able to even things out and figuring out creative ways to do that. The only thing I'm not too sure of is Scarlett. When she was in Impact, she did her own thing. She tried to get in the ring, didn't really work. When she came to NXT with Karrion Kross and that first kind of introduction to them, you know, it was okay, it was different, it was spooky, it was creepy. But now I just feel like she's there for the sake of being there. And she doesn't get involved, she doesn't really interact with anybody. It wasn't until Finn accidentally kicked her that became a thing, but I think Karrion's image, I think the way what he does, I think the impact he can have doesn't need Scarlett. So if she were to go off and do whatever, nothing would change from him. He would never falter as a result. So I'm hoping that they do one of two things. Either she kind of does go away, if that's what you want to say it, or her role makes more sense to what's going on. Their entrance, at first I was like, oh, this is really cool. I'm getting a little tired of it, and this is definitely one of those entrances that would not carry through to WWE. It's too long. It's, unless you're Bray Wyatt, it's slow. And generally speaking, WWE doesn't have time for that. I'm hoping that by the time I get caught up with everything, that Karrion will still be champ. I think there is real potential in having him be the leader of the locker room, in the sense that he's the top dog, and having people fight for it. He hasn't lost yet. That obviously helps. The fact that he didn't lose the belt originally, he was injured. So as long as he stays healthy, there's nothing that says he can't go months on end as the champion. Because at this point in time, other than Finn, there's nobody that stands up physically that would also have the ring awareness that Finn does to match up with him. So again, Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, they're not Finn. Finn's got this aura about him that I think really separates him from other people of his size. The other main event was the grudge match. Kyle O'Reilly, Adam Cole, the breakdown of Undisputed Era. Well, I said before, I wish they had drawn it out a little more and really picked up on clues. And it was interesting when you watched the vignette leading into this match, the way they edited it picked up those clues. picked up those hints as they were focusing on Adam Cole in different segments and the looks he was giving. So I wish they had done that more over longer and really get into it. I'm not a fan of either music. Kyle O'Reilly's was like this rock stuff, and he was doing his weird dancey walky thing, and just wasn't for me. And then Adam Cole's music also, and it's tough, I think, when you have Undisputed Era's music for so long and it's so distinct and it fits so perfectly, anything else that comes up won't necessarily compare, and maybe just because it's too soon. But also they're of similar style, both between the two of them and as it correlates to Undisputed Era. So it started things off on a kind of a weird note for me. I wasn't, not every grudge match is going to go well, and not every grudge match is the same, but I think there's been certain ones that have definitely stood out more, and I don't know if it's really because these two haven't had enough in-ring time against each other that maybe the grudge match came a little too soon, but when I look at NXT grudge matches, the one big one that comes to mind is Gargano Ciampa, and how they took 2, 3, 4 major matches to really sink in their displeasure for each other and then have that kind of balls to the wall, no limit real match. And so this one just, it didn't punch for me the way I was hoping, given the heat that each one had with each other. Obviously, they've had a history together. I don't know, because I didn't really follow in Ring of Honor, if that history was the same way that Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn are, where they've wrestled together for a long time, and they've wrestled against each other, and they have these great understanding of each other moves. I'm not sure. I just didn't quite, I don't know. It just didn't really feel right for me. There was a couple things, though, I do want to call out. I kind of love when the announcer's table doesn't break. I have no idea if it is supposed to or not, but it certainly makes things look much more painful. And the backdrop in which the table didn't break, you really heard it. And so at least if it doesn't anything else, it shows the brutality of the situation. So, but I still get a kick out of it. Or, like in the case of Toni Storm, where it broke before she had a chance to even do anything with it, which was also a bit of a laugh. Near the end, you had that stage spot where Cole, while he was in the guillotine, slammed O'Reilly through the stage, which I was surprised, just because I didn't see the stage itself where it would have done that. And then to have Cole come out and then kick out the side of it and yank O'Reilly through, which I thought it was different. And it really, I think, got them to that point where they were ready to just get to that end. And this was a real great way. And the fact that it continued. We see other matches where the crashing through the stage or, into the electric boxes where sparks go off or whatever it is, that usually ends it. So it was different that this didn't end it. And the fact that he kicked in the side of the stage or the ramp was a big bonus. That ending was, whoa. I didn't know what he was going to do with the chair upside down. And the way that the small margin for error when O'Reilly came down, where there really wasn't a lot of space between Adam's head and the leg of the chair. So that was definitely, I think, ended things on a really high note with how that match went. I think when you have your ups and downs, this was definitely an up. And if you're going to have an up, the ending's probably a good spot to have it. I'll find out now going forward. I mean, I took the break in order to get caught up on TakeOver, and then now I'll get back into the regular swing of things. So I'll see what happens with this feud. Is it over with? Is it a one and done? Is there a continued story like Ciampa and Gargano? Or is this a take a break and then come back later? And then we also have the Roderick, you know, Roderick Strong thing. Where does he fit in? Where does he come back? Is he going to be involved? Are we end up with a triple threat match? Or is that going to be, you know, Roderick siding with one or the other? There's lots to look forward to. So I am, surprise, surprise, looking forward to where this story goes. As long as there is regular contests, not only just between them, but that they have other people, just so that it's not so stagnant, and they can stay in the mix with everything else, then I'm certainly looking forward to it. So that was two nights of TakeOver Stand and Deliver. I think as overall, it was a very solid two nights of wrestling. Lots to enjoy, very little to not enjoy, which is always, you know, what you want. And as I compare it to other NXT TakeOvers, and I think historically people have also seen this, that most TakeOvers are really good. And partly because they're not all the time. As well as this is a chance for these people to showcase themselves. Whether it's a potential to move up into Raw and SmackDown, or it's, you know, they cement themselves as the leader of the brand, or they're new to the stage in general. They're really pushing to stand out. They don't go and necessarily do all the craziness that ends up being, you're not talking about the wrestler, you're just talking about the spot. But it seems to be clicking that every TakeOver, there is at least two or three matches that you will remember, and that no matter how bad the rest of it is, this will make it good. So after the break, coming to AEW Dynamite, and after that, the last shot. So please stick around. Here we are, last shot. Before we get you going, two items to just quickly discuss. Lucha masks. As I'm watching NXT and TakeOver and taking the mask off of Santo Escobar, what does that do? Why do they do it? I'm concerned that it's going to kind of be the end of the Lucha in WWE. We have Lince Dorado and Grand Metalik are your kind of two final Lucha wrestlers. Rey Mysterio is a totally different story. But WCW went and took all the masks off all their Luchas. And I have to say, like, I feel like you're missing something. You're missing the other half of their character. Utilizing the mask and being able to build something completely around it offers a new energy, a different energy, more mysterious, you know, understandings, or more, whatever the word I'm trying to say, but more things to this character that can be brought in because you don't know who this person is. By taking the mask off Santos Escobar and only having the other two, will we see any more? Like, or is this the end of the Lucha in WWE? I'd really hate to see that. Who knows? But I am certainly not on the side of fandom of taking the mask of Lucha. AEW definitely has more, and they from time to time will play off the removing of the mask, which is, well, it makes sense. It's pretty ballsy. But it's definitely not as many as there used to be in, I would say, North American main promotions. But I would like them to not keep taking the masks off. I like the mystery of who is this person under the mask and what do they bring without needing to know who they are. So the other piece is long hair. As I was watching the match with Matt Riddle, he kept moving his hair out of his face. And it was either Jim Ross or Eric Bischoff who had said a while ago that I was listening to their podcast that they took issue with the long hair, both on the men's and the women's. When you have the hair covering their face, you miss some of the emotion that they're trying to get across by, you know, facial expressions. But more importantly for me, you're constantly moving the hair out of your face, and it takes away from what I'm trying to watch. It is a bit hypocritical because I currently have long hair, but I'm also not a professional wrestler. I'm not on TV. I'm only a voice, so it doesn't matter. But
you know, if we look at WWE, you have AJ with the long hair, you have Matt Riddle with long hair, you have Seth Rollins, you have John Morrison, you have Roman Reigns, you know, you have all these guys with long hair, and at some point in time, do you just let them keep it? Do they get to cut it? Is it too weird to bring them back to a short hairstyle? At least with Jackson Riker, you cut his hair and it still fits in with his persona, if not accentuates it. On the women's side, it's still the same kind of problem. Although I do find they are doing less and less of moving the hair out of their faces. But there is still some times where you lose out on things because you can't see their face at all. So I hope that the long hair trend doesn't continue. I hope that there is a happy medium where, yes, there, you know, you can have his hair that's long if you want it, but it's not covering up the other piece of this match. So that's it. That's the last shot. That is the end of the show. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate all of those who are willing to take some time to listen to me chat. Once and final time, this is Kyle here for the Pro Wrestling Outsider Show. Hopefully everyone has a good rest of their day, and we will see you all next time. Thank you.